Hello and welcome to Entertain Your Ears, the official podcast of MultimediaCritics.com. My name is Cody Webb, and today I'm talking to the special guest, Douglas Equals, the upcoming writer of Tesla Prime. Hello, Douglas.
Hey, Cody, how you doing?
I'm doing great. First off, you work for NASA. How long have you been working for NASA?
I do work for NASA. I started in 1997. The same week that the first Mars rover of the recent rovers, the same week that the first Mars rover, Mars Pathfinder, landed on the surface. So that was a very exciting first week for me. And
that would be awesome. Like that would be an experience. That's something you'll never forget.
Absolutely. I was just out of school, and it was like all the news cameras were there, and they were interviewing my, you know, future colleagues, friends and colleagues. And I was just this wide-eyed new graduate that was sort of looking around and sort of taking it all in.
Man, that would be incredible. So what exactly do you, I remember reading up on WordPress that you're an engineer, right?
I'm officially a systems engineer.
Okay.
Senior systems engineer at JPL. And I started out, my first project was a project called SRTM, which was, it's a synthetic aperture radar mission that flew on the space shuttle in 2001. 2000. And basically it was a mission to map the whole Earth in three dimensions over an 11-day period. Yeah, my job was to write it's kind of a funny slash long story that I don't know if we have time to get into, but my job, I was hired to write the command software straight out of school, and the person that hired me said, you know, do you know how to program? And I'm like, well, I've taken a couple of programming classes. I took C++ and Fortran. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, do you know C? And I'm like, well, you know, I know C++. How different could it be? And for all the computer geeks out there, they're sort of like laughing right now, I'm sure, saying that C++ and C are nothing alike. So I had no idea what I was getting myself into. And then, you know, fast forward 3 years from that, 2.5 years, I was down at Johnson Space Center on the headsets talking to the astronauts, telling them, you know, how to set up the onboard radar system to configure it so that they can get the data that the scientists on the ground needed. And it was just like a surreal moment of this juxtaposition from this new hire to now in the Johnson Space Center saying, you know, Houston, we have a problem kind of thing.
Wow. That is incredible. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. But since then, I've worked on, I worked in Cassini for a while. I worked in for 5 years. Cassini is this spacecraft that's orbiting Saturn. It's a bus-sized spacecraft that's orbiting Saturn, taking pictures, collecting data. And I worked on CloudSat. I was the deputy flight director for CloudSat for a year. And I'm working on a project called RapidSCAT, which is a payload that's going to fly in the International Space Station available next year.
Wow.
And it's looking at the wind-wave correlations and mapping wind speeds and wave sizes over the Earth in a repeat 16. It's actually an hour and a half orbit, 16 orbits per day, and it's going to be an exciting mission.
That's incredible. So sounds like you've done a lot of work with them.
It's been an adventure. It's been a journey. Been fun.
I mean, man, I really do wish I had the smarts to work at a company like that. I mean,
me too.
It's just incredible. I mean, I'm, you know, I like space, you know, I like astronomy. I'm not like some guy that's, you know, like, oh, I know all the solar systems, you know, I know all that stuff. It's just, I'm just one of those people that just likes looking at the stars at night, you know. I just actually got done reading. I don't know if you've ever read this. It's called Dimensions and Miracles by Robert Sheckley.
I haven't, no.
And did you ever, what about, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy?
Read that, yeah.
Okay. Well, if you like that book, then you would love Robert Sheckley's Dimensions and Miracles. It's a precursor to The Hitchhiker's Guide, actually. And it came out in 68. And I actually just got a copy in of it that released in 2002 that has like five novels from Robert Sheckley. I would definitely, when you get free time, because I know you're super busy, but if you get a chance to read it, or you can download it from Audible, from audible.com, they have it on there. you know, for like, I think it's like $15 or something. And it's like it's a very short book. It's like 5.5 hours long, but it's a phenomenal, phenomenal book. I just found out about it from Neil Gaiman Presents on Audible, and it's one of the best, you know, sci-fi books that I've ever read. It's cool. It's truly incredible.
I'll add it to my list.
It's got the witty humor that you see in the Hitchhiker's Guide.
Yeah.
And so, and I'm currently trying to go through and read those books. I've only seen the movie. But so yeah, you should definitely check that out if you like the Hitchhiker's Guide. Connecting with books, I'm going to start talking a little bit about your book.
Yes.
Tessa Brime in the Regulus event, right?
Yeah.
Is that how it's pronounced? Correct. Okay.
Tessa Brime in the Regulus event.
Man, this book, I'm not going to be praising you just because you're on my podcast, just because
yeah.
you said you would be on my podcast. I am praising your book just because it's great from what I've read. I thoroughly enjoy it.
Thank you very much.
Like I'd said either on Twitter or email, I don't remember which, because we've done both of them so much, you know, yeah. messaging back and forth on both of them.
Yes.
But I read the first like two chapters and I was already hooked. And the reason, and I'm not, you know, if you've been on my site, you can tell that I'm not one that just says, oh, I like that book.
Yeah.
And I know that's what you're not wanting, because I read on you, you know, with the beta readers, you said, I don't want you just telling me, I like it, or, it's not any good, or whatever. You want people to go into detail. Yes. And, you know, one of my favorite chapters is chapter, one, because the way you introduce the characters, the way that, you know, you're already within the first chapter, you're already saying, okay, this is this person, this is this person, this is their job. You know, I just love the way that you introduced them. I love the fact, the very way you started off the book with Thomas's dream. Like, yes, I thought that was amazing. And I really, really love the descriptive writing in this book. And I am personally very big on descriptive writing. I, you know, I'm not a very fast reader, so it helps me out a whole lot when somebody is kind of descriptive, because I can't stand a book that doesn't have very much descriptive writing in it.
Yeah.
If you've ever read a Stephen King book, you know he's descriptive. I mean, that's why his books are 700-900 pages long. I mean, 11/22/63 was a very long book. It was very drawn out, but it was very descriptive. And I have to say, this book of yours is pretty great about that, because I just started reading the pages and instantly you were describing the sand on the beach and the wind, and as soon as I started reading it, I felt like I was on the beach. I felt like I was sitting there watching these kids run around flying a kite, and it was incredible. I was like, wow, this is truly something special. And
well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
I truly can't wait to read the rest of the book.
Well, you know, I'll send you a copy once it's ready.
Most definitely would appreciate that, because it's something special. It's just, I love the fact that something else that I really love about the book is the fact that you've chosen a different path than most people do. Either they cram character descriptions and character plots, you know, the plots of the characters, and describe the characters really soon on, and they just cram it all into one chapter, or maybe two chapters, excuse me, and or they, you know, it takes them a really, really long time before you finally know stuff about each of the characters. And I love the fact that, you know, you are telling this story about, and I'm going to go ahead and just say to the listeners, the people that are listening to this, there is going to be some spoilers. We're going to be talking a little bit about the book. So, if you don't want anything spoiled, just go ahead, read the 10 chapters, and then come back and listen to the podcast, but there will be spoilers. So, but I love the fact that you're talking about, with, you know, them not finding the signals from Earth, and they finally get to the moon, and you have this whole story going on, but in the midst of it, every once in a while, you pull off a character to the side, and you're focusing on this character, and then boom, here we go. They see something, they do something that reminds them of a memory, and that's how you do flashbacks to their yes. childhood. And yes. I absolutely love that. Like, that's a great way of telling a story. That's a great way of character development. And I definitely applaud you on that. That's like the perfect way of doing character development. That's the right way of doing it, because I've seen so many books do it so sloppily that, if that's even a word, it's so sloppy how some of them do it. And that's, in my opinion, the proper way and the right way. And that's the way that you get the reader involved in the book and wanting to read more, is by setting it up properly like you did. And
well, thank you very much. I appreciate
and
that.
And so I really enjoy that. It's just, man, I'm just.
And your check is in the mail for after this podcast.
All right. Yes. but so, I mean, it's just, it's remarkable. It really is. I mean,
well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
I will for sure. Definitely. I'll definitely for sure try to send in, you know, still, I mean, I know I'm doing this podcast and most people are like, that guy's getting the easy way out. He's getting the beta read, you know, the easy way out by doing podcast. No, I'm still going to send in, you know, once I'm completely done, I'm wanting to go back after I read the last few chapters. I'm wanting to definitely go back and do a, chapter by chapter synopsis.
Okay.
Great. And if I'm reading on my iPhone actually. So, which, you know, people always talk about the fact that you can do screenshots and like, that's stupid. It's kind of cool at first, but it's not really useful. But for me, it is, because I'm reading this book of yours and, I'm trying to remember, let's see. I have a particular spot in chapter 5 that I really, really liked and I screenshot it and, let's see. Okay, it was the part where we were seeing the video, who is it?
Daxman
seeing the video of that Kyle was recording of, the ring interfering with Earth and stuff. Yeah. And that was just incredible. Like, I love that chapter because there's so much detail into what's going on. And you know, Kyle's not a main character.
He's not.
But. Either. Man, by the time you get done, you know, hearing this overlay that, you know, this video that's happened, you're about ready to start crying because you're like, you feel like you went on this journey with this guy and you've only spent one chapter with him. I mean, that's literally my favorite chapter. You know, the parts dealing with Kyle are my favorite parts, and that's not saying anything bad or negative about the rest of the book. It's just that I think, you know, you just captured that character in just a few just a little bit of this book. And it just, I love the way you did it, how, you know, he started and stopped and started and stopped. And, you know, the messages to his daughter and to his wife and stuff. And it's just, you've seen months and months and months go by with this one character and just a chapter and a half.
Yeah. And this video log that he keeps.
And I'm just like, man, this is awesome.
Yeah. Well, thanks. You know, and it's funny you mentioned that because Kyle, again, these are spoilers for people that haven't read the first 10 chapters, but Kyle is now dead and, but he still plays an integral part. And in fact, probably the most important part in the whole story.
Because without him,
when we get to the later chapters, like in chapter like 33, 34, he plays an integral part in the motivations of people in the story. I'll sort of pull back a little bit. I don't want to give too much away. But that is really an underlying theme, is the bond that he has with Daxman. And Daxman's watching this video and he's so moved by this person that was once his friend. And that's sort of captured on, and I know I'm giving spoilers away, but that sort of delved on these future specs that he has in the book. Mm-hmm. And it is such a motivation for him and becomes really the central theme about loyalty to family and friends and love for that people have for family. And that's really how the story ends. that, you know, so it's interesting that you picked up on that, that, this scene with Kyle and the video log that he keeps about the Regulus event and about the events of his life and his attachment to his daughter. And so that is really a central theme to the whole story, not just in that chapter, not just in the first 10 chapters, but really the whole story is sort of a father's love for his daughter.
Well, that's great to hear. I'm thoroughly excited to read the rest of the book. Now you've really got me excited to read the rest of the book, because I love that particular part. I mean, you know, it's crazy, though, because like I was mentioning you before we started the podcast, that I said I would talk about in the podcast. You know, I started reading the plot synopsis that you had up on WordPress. And you can, your listeners, if you're still listening, you can check this out at teslaprime.wordpress.com, right?
Yep, that's right.
Okay, so you can check that out. That's where you can read his book, the first 10 chapters. And if you want to be a beta reader, all you have to do is just read the first 10 chapters, give, I would probably say, about a page and a half worth of, I would imagine that's probably what you're looking for.
The important thing, if there's listeners out there right now that are thinking of becoming a beta reader, I'm very happy that you want to be a beta reader. The only thing I ask is that it be specific.
That's key.
If there's general, I mean, I appreciate when people say, like, I loved it, I want to read more, send me the next chapter. I mean, I appreciate that, but it doesn't help me get the book mm-mm. better. And so I'm looking for very specific, this line, you know, could have been worded better, or this person, I felt this statement was out of place or out of character. Like, that's the kind of thing I'm looking for, not general statements like, yeah, I loved it, or I didn't quite care for this part. I'm looking for, you know, suggestions and specific criticism.
Yeah, because if that's all we got from people, the readers, then well, I'm going to sit here for 10 years working on this one book because I can't get anything, any full information out of people.
Although I will say that, I mean, the beta readers I've had so far have been phenomenal. I have, you know, I've been so blessed that with the people that have come through on Twitter, they've been invaluable in this process, and I'm acknowledging each and every one of them in my acknowledgement section. And really, this is a collaborative effort. I mean, I almost feel guilty that I'm being given credit for this book, because there's so many people that have contributed to this, and in such meaningful and significant ways that this is really a collaborative effort. And I'm so grateful to everyone that's come forward and offered specific advice and feedback and suggestions on way things can be done better. I'm so grateful.
You know, and I really personally think that's how it should be in the writing process, because then, you know, you're allowing your audience to connect with you. And you know,
absolutely,
we have so many people that bash the internet, hate the internet, can't stand it, think it's evil. But I'm like, but there's, I mean, and I get there is some parts where you're like, I don't like this part of the internet. You know, you don't like, you know, negative forums and stuff, and you don't like how people misuse Facebook or hacking into people's accounts and getting their information. But there's that positive side of, like, example with you, where you're a writer and you've followed, what, 473,000 people on Twitter? And
right. Yeah, it's like 63,000 right now.
Oh, 63? Okay, well, but anyway, so it's, you know, 400,000 people you're following, and then a lot of those people are following you because they're like, oh, this guy's, you know, this guy's legit, and they read your book and they're like, wow, this is awesome. I mean, like I said, I read the first two chapters and I was like, wow, this is great. I want to read more of it. I was hooked, and I was like, let me go follow this guy on Twitter. And I had seen where either you had done something with somebody on their website or something. I didn't catch the particulars of it. I was like, wonder if he'd be willing to do a podcast with me. And I was,
of course,
I was like, wow, this is incredible. He's already, like, responded and wants to do a podcast. I was like, this is awesome. You really don't know how much this means to me, because, I mean,
it's my pleasure.
You know, it's just, this is something that I want to do more of. I mean, this is something I'm passionate about. I've been running Multimedia Critics for about a year and a half.
Yeah.
I've been running this podcast for about a year. So it's just being me and my friend that actually, I wish he could have gotten a chance to, read the first 10 chapters, because I imagine he would have liked it. His name is Kenan Price. He's the other guy that's on my website with me. Mm-hmm. And, he's actually an English major at Laternal University, in Longview, Texas, where I'm from. And so, he's just now actually about to graduate in about a week. So, I'm definitely going to suggest to him. I told him about the book and he sounded interested in it. Mm-hmm. But I definitely, you know, we're obviously not done with the podcast yet, but I'm just going ahead and saying this in advance. When it does come time for you to, publish the book and it's coming mm-hmm. out, I would love to have you back on because,
of course,
I know Cannon would probably, he would thoroughly enjoy to probably sit down and talk to you because he, you know, he's the English major side of our website. I'm not that great with English, but I can handle pretty well, I guess on my own, but I know that he would probably want to sit down and talk with you too a little bit, but
yeah, definitely absolutely. Would
love
to
have
to.
You, you know, definitely would love to have you back on when that time comes around.
Absolutely.
But so, I mean, it's just, you know, this is a book that I'm already, you know, holding up. Now, some people are like, oh, come on, you've only read a few chapters, but I'm already kind of holding this up for me personally. I'm already kind of holding it up with some of the great science fiction, you know, space exploration books, because it seems like you took some deep thought into this book when you were writing it.
Yes, very much.
It seems like you've spent quite a bit of time on it. And I have to mention, man, I love the humor in this book. It's very subtle. It's very subtle.
Yeah, it's it is there. Subtle.
Like yeah. One of my favorite characters in the book is Clara.
I love
the ship. Like, because I get so tired of reading space exploration books where somebody, you know, they just have these characters, you know, their main characters, and they have this ship, but the ship's not a character. I love it when a book has a ship as the character, and you quite literally had it as a character because you have the character, you know, you have the computer system talking. And I love when you have Thomas, or, you know, in the first chapter when Thomas, you know, says something to Claire and Claire's like, I don't understand what you mean. You know, I just love that. I love that sense of humor that you have in writing Claire's character.
Yeah. In fact, there's a Claire arc as we go through this. And
that's cool.
There's a very moving scene for me that writing it at the very end. I won't give anything away, but where Clara is sort of, in a sense, pleading for a sense of humanity, because there's something that's clearly not her programming that she wants to understand. And things are happening that are out of her control, and she's asking people to teach her. And in a sense, she's asking for a slice of humanity to understand what the crew understands. And in that moment, you sort of realize that, you know, the difference between her and the crew, but also her deficiencies as a person. But she's very much a character in the story, and you realize that, and her weaknesses as a character come through in that moment when she asks to be taught. And I'm trying to avoid the story as much as possible to avoid spoilers, but what I've heard from beta readers is that that's a very moving scene because, you know, she's a character, but she clearly has deficiencies. She's not a person. She's not a human. She doesn't have the emotional intelligence that the rest of the crew has, and that she's asking people to teach her that emotional intelligence at this last hour of the story. And it's, from what I've heard from the beta readers, is that it's a very moving scene.
Yeah, I would imagine that probably would be. Now, I want to ask you real quick. You had said before we would probably only be able to do this for half an hour. Are we able to do a little bit longer?
Sure. Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. Yep. Okay. I was just making sure.
We're good.
So I didn't want to, you know, I didn't want to, if you were busy doing something, I wanted to.
No,
you
we're
know,
good. We're
stop
good
you
to
from,
continue.
You know, do what you were doing. I sent you an email of the list of some of the questions because, I mean, like I told you, it's not really an interview. I mean, I hope this hasn't felt like an interview for
no,
me.
Not
it
at
hasn't.
All.
It's
not
felt like a conversation.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I do want to move into a few of the little questions that I had sent you
yeah,
an email
yeah,
of.
Absolutely.
So what would be some of your influences, you know, on upon writing this book, and what kind of, let's see, What did I have?
Like inspired me.
Yeah, what inspired you to write it? Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when I was a kid, I used to love to create stories, and in fact, I'm gonna go on my my nerdy side a little bit and say,
hey, you know, that's perfectly fine with me, man. I am a nerd all the way.
All right. So I used to play this game, Dungeons and Dragons.
I think I've heard of that small little thing. You've heard of that? I've never played that thing, but I've heard of it.
So I used to love being the dungeon master, not because I was sort of like in control or something, but I loved telling the story and like really creating these challenging situations where people that, you know, complex goals and, you know, sort of, or conflicting goals and they're really hard situations philosophically for the characters to get out of. And it was just sort of my personality. I loved to engage the people that were reading the story or hearing the story. And really that continued all the way through high school. I mean, I just remember in high school, like I used to love writing stories. And of course it sort of evolved into, I don't know if you saw the Dead Poets Society.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
And one of its classics.
Who has and what nerdy guy has not seen that movie? Like they are not a nerd if they have not seen that movie, in my opinion. That's an amazing movie.
And one of the things that I love what he said when there was, we write to woo women. and I, through high school, like that's what I did. I wrote to woo women, and I sort of evolved, you know, my skills and whatever with writing. And I, you know, I won a couple of awards and contests and stuff, but I spoke to some people that, were actually making a living. Cause in high school, you're not, you know, you're on your own or anything. And so I wrote to people that are actually trying to make a living as an author, and they're writing to earn their paycheck. You know, and they said it was incredibly difficult to sort of even eke out this like minimum wage existence as a writer. And it scared me enough, I think, at that point, even though I wanted to become a writer, it scared me enough to sort of go to my second passion, which was solar system exploration in space and astronomy. And so I changed direction and I went into US. I went to USC and graduated with an aerospace engineering degree. And then
how long did that take to actually, because I think that was something else I had, was how long it took to actually, you know, get to the process of actually working for NASA.
So I graduated. Let's tell you how old I am. I'm graduated from high school in 1990 and started working in 1996. 96, 97. 97 was the first year that I started working at JPL. So it was about 7 years of going to school, and I started my 2 bachelor's degrees and then a master's degree at USC, where I got a degree in astronautics. And I was going to school during my first year at JPL. And then I got a degree in I got an MBA from Pepperdine after that, technology management. So that's sort of my education in a nutshell. But it was sort of in that moment in high school where I decided that I wanted to go into engineering as opposed to becoming a writer, just because I had heard that there was really no career in becoming a writer. It was, you know, it's sort of like, you know, you have this dream of going to the major leagues in baseball. And, yeah, you know, people tell you, well, look, you know, it happens, but it's incredibly rare. Like, you're not going to make a career in baseball. I kind of felt that way with writing. Mm-hmm. You know, that you have the Dean Koontzes and the you know, David Brins and Larry Nivens and Stephen King and all, you know, that these people that have made a living in writing, but it's incredibly rare. And so I sort of went with a more practical goal, but I've always sort of held on to this, to me, this romanticism idea of like becoming this writer. And, you know, a couple of years ago, I, after having worked at JPL for a number of years, sort of said, you know, like I really like to write, and I'm writing these short stories and I'm working with this website called Scribophile.com, which is a great site for aspiring writers to get peer feedback. And uploaded a couple. So I sat down and said, you know, I want to write a book. This is like on my bucket list, and I want to write this science fiction novel. And so I wrote a list of like 30 ideas. And I sort of bounced this idea, this list off of friends. And this one idea, this concept that sort of kept bubbling to the surface about these 7 astronauts who go on this interstellar mission. And they come back 27 years later and find that the Earth has vanished. And it's this sort of like the grandest of all murder mysteries, that the whole planet has vanished. and what this crew of seven people, of seven scientists and engineers that are not prepared for this in the least, how they respond to this crisis, and what they do and how they interact, and all their own insecurities start bubbling to the surface, their own fears, and how they manage that and how they bond together to solve this mystery and to figure out what happened and to ultimately rescue mankind from extinction. And so it was, you know, that story that from the people that I bounced around, that story was like the most favorited. And so I pushed forward, and I, that was, gosh, about 2 years ago that I started this.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean, it's been a while. I mean, I've been rewriting it for about a year. Like, I finished about a year ago, and I've been working with beta readers and, you know, just a phenomenal crew with my editor, her name's Sheila in Kentucky. I'm sure she's listening now. And she has basically volunteered her time to work with me on clearing things up, because she loved the story so much. And, you know, it's incredible core of people that have really rallied behind the story. And I'm so honored to be working with them. I mean, it's just been such a collaborative effort.
Yeah, that's definitely important to have a good editor. That's always key. Oh, that's awesome, man. I didn't realize you'd been working on it for that long.
Yeah.
Now I have a question regarding to something you had said on WordPress. You had said you had done this 4 times. Did you mean rewriting the book, or did you mean doing books before, or?
No, so not books before. This is my first book.
Okay.
But I've gone through 4 prior to the current round, and it's I've gone through 4 rounds of like soliciting beta readers on Twitter.
Oh, okay.
And so people, as I would give them, you know, the chapters 1 through 10, 2 through 20, or 12, 11 through 20, etc., and got input from them and then would revise. And so when I collected like 10, usually 10 to 20 beta readers per cycle, I would gather their inputs collectively, revise, and then resend and collect, you know, there'd be 10 to 20 more beta readers that would send in comments and then revise. And so that was a cycle for me.
Okay.
So I'm on basically the 5th cycle, although it's a little bit different this time, as in that beta readers are sort of coming up, not as a group, but as individuals. And I incorporate their comments as individuals. So I think, I'm actually in the process of sort of wrapping up the last round of revisions, getting ready for one print. I'm going to do sort of the first edition print that I'm going to print off 16 copies only for people that have really helped with this process. And, you know, my editors, friends and family and whatnot, I'm going to print off 16 copies and then give them to those people that have really helped the most. And then work on the next round, and then go off and find agents and publishers. That's my goal right now.
Oh, okay. Okay. Another question that I had to ask was, what is some of your, you know, obviously Hitchhiker's Guide, but what are some other, space exploration, novels or books that you like?
Well, I loved Ender's Game, obviously. I think that's sort of a popular favorite, and I'm glad to see they're making it out of the movie. I'm really excited about that. I loved also Moton God's Eye. Larry Niven and Jerry Purnell.
Mm-hmm.
I'm reading Hyperion now by Dan Simmons, and I just started Existence by David Brin, who's a fantastic writer. So just to give you an idea of some of my library, I'm sort of glancing around. But
the reason why I was asking is because, I'm a slow read, so obviously it takes me a while to go through books.
Sure.
And I just thought, well, since you're writing space novel, I thought, well, I would knock out 2 birds, you know, with 1 stone, see what your favorites are, and, you know, check out some books myself, maybe.
Yeah.
Because I thought, well, yeah, if you're writing a book like you are. No, I haven't. I've heard of it, though.
You should definitely read it. It's a great book.
That will be the next audio. If they have that in audio form, I would definitely.
Yeah.
I think they do. But I'll definitely check that book out then. I'll trust you.
Yeah. Ender's Game is a great book. And they're turning into a film, I think, later this year. That's going to be released as a film.
Yeah, they're supposed to be, from my understanding.
Yeah.
And so, speaking of films, segue, what is some of your favorite, you know, space exploration movies?
I mean, first and foremost, you know, I grew up on Star Wars. I love Star Wars. The original trilogy, it was, I mean, literally we watched Empire Strikes Back 100 times. Like we would just have it on in the background. We would play games. Like it just became so ingrained in who we were as kids growing up. But beyond that, I mean, I love the Star Treks that came out. I mean, obviously Wrath of Khan is my favorite. Contact with Jodie Foster was another great one. 2001 and 2010 A Space Odyssey were also very good. District 9 was a great film, although that's not exactly
SpaceX. I have to say thank you sir, because me and my friend we feel like we're the only people in the world that love that movie. That movie was the best movie of that year in my opinion. I bow down to that movie. That movie is incredible.
Yeah, it's a great
movie. I know, like you said, it's not very much of a space movie, but it does have aliens. I mean,
yes.
Man, how bad to the bone was that with the robot that caught all the bullets and then shot it back? I was like,
yes.
Oh my gosh, that was so awesome. That was like the cherry on top of that movie. And it's crazy how little amount of money they made that movie off of.
Yes.
Wow. Yeah. That's incredible. Yeah. That I definitely agree with you. That is. If I was to tell my friend Cannon that you like District 9, I'd be like, oh man, I got to talk to this guy. Because every time we talk to somebody, they're like, yeah. District 9 sucks. I'm like,
No, it doesn't. No. It's a great movie.
Oh, you are blind, sir.
It is a great movie.
I'm glad there's somebody out there that agrees with us on that. On that note, did you like the Hitchhiker movie or no?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was entertaining. I don't think it's like Oscar worthy, but it was an entertaining movie. I liked it and sort of came away, you know.
Yeah, I personally feel that way too. I actually just got it in on Blu-ray just the other day, and I watched it. And I was like I've been, you know, I went through and listened to Dimensions of Miracles and watch the Hitchhiker's Guide. I was like, I gotta do some space related stuff, you know. I gotta watch or read some space exploration stuff to prepare. it's personally one of my favorites. I mean, like you said, it's obviously not an Oscar film, but it's crazy because the lead actor of that movie is the guy who plays as the Hobbit. I'm like, oh my god.
Yes, exactly.
Back when I was a kid, just to give a little brief story of my background, back when I was a kid growing up, I just watched movies and just took them as they were. I didn't pay attention to the directors. I didn't pay attention to the writers. I didn't keep up with the actors' names until I met Cannon. This guy has opened my eyes when it comes to entertainment. The first thing he introduced me to was Lost. I don't know if you ever watched that series.
I watched religiously until the last season. and then I sort of, don't get me started on Lost because
because we'd be sitting here for 5 hours.
Because it was sort of like the last season, I was so angry. I was literally white knuckling my chair, like watching the show, and I'm like,
we wouldn't want to get into that argument. we would be like ready to punch each other by the end of this conversation if we did, because I love the final season.
Okay, I gotcha. But it was just so. It was, you know, and I think that the writers, just to let me go off in just a quick 20-second tangent on Lost, the writers actually admitted that they didn't know how the last season was going to end. And it just seemed like they were sort of scrambling to fill space.
Yeah, that's usually really how it is. I mean, the final seasons, you know, the final season of a TV series is like the final boss of a video game. You see so many video games that have crappy final levels where you're just like, oh god, that was awful.
Yeah.
Like I love the Batman games, the Batman Arkham Asylum, Arkham City, but the ending was horrible. But then you play BioShock Infinite that just came out, just not too long ago, and that has one of the best endings to anything I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
I mean, that game had a beautiful ending, but I mean, I can understand why people wouldn't like it, like the final season of Lost.
I love the whole series. I mean, that was the part that was so gut-wrenching, is that I loved the whole series. And it was like at the end, there was just so much unexplained, left unanswered, you know, didn't make sense. And I was just like, no, 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 you know, like, give me what, you know, but anyway.
I will tell Cannon now. I will tell Cannon not to listen to the podcast because he's even more religious about it than I am. Like, he has the whole Lost Complete Collection, you know, the Blu-ray collection with the pyramid thing, and he's like, that guy dreams of being Jack. I mean, not Jack. Locke.
Locke.
Like, he connects with Locke a lot.
Lots of great character.
Well, we'll see. Just a little information about Cannon. He actually has cerebral palsy in his legs, and so, you know, he has to deal with a lot of stuff that Locke had to deal with. You know, he used to have a walker and stuff. Don't know if he wants me to put that information out, but now it is. I think that's why me and him connect so well, is because I don't treat him like somebody that's got, you know, some disorder. I treat him just like I do anybody else. And I think that's why we connected so well. Because I've seen, you know, because we met, in high school, actually. Mm-hmm. We've been best friends since, but he introduced me to Lost, and that was like the first thing he introduced me to. And from there, I was like, oh man, now I'm keeping up with the actors, you know, I'm keeping up with all that. But I didn't know, I watched 500 Days of Summer with Zooey Deschanel in, and I did not realize that was Zooey Deschanel in Hitchhikers. And I went back and I was just like, oh my God, she's that much more amazing now. She's that much more incredible. And then the guy who plays as the president of the universe in that movie is played as Hammer in Iron Man 2. It's like, wow, that doesn't even look like him. I'm sorry I went off on that little tangent about movies, but I'm a big movie person. I may not read very many books, but I love my movies and love my video games. It's great. A lot of the movies that we have. Did you ever watch the J.J. Abrams version of Star Trek?
I did, and I loved it, actually. Okay. So I'm cautiously optimistic about what he'll do with Star Wars. I want to think that he will masterfully recreate the Star Wars universe.
J.J. Abrams. You know, people hate to bring it back around to Lost, but people always hate on him for Lost. But I'm like, people, you do realize he just started it up. He did the first few episodes. Did a little bit of season one, and then he let go of it and let Damon and Carlton take control. So I'm like, don't crap on him because you don't like the ending.
Yeah, I agree.
If you're going to crap on somebody, which I'm not saying you should, if you were, crap on Damon and Carlton.
I completely agree.
Abrams has nothing to do with the ending. He just kind of gave them an ideal and they went with it, and how it turned out was on them.
So I'm very excited about the potential for the new Star Wars films.
I'm excited for Star Trek 2.
Star Trek 2, absolutely.
Oh, man. That trailer they've been releasing is incredible. I'm like, oh my gosh, this looks so amazing.
I agree. It looks great.
It looks fantastic.
And I love the first film, so I'm hoping that this one at least is equal to it, if not better. I think he's a great director for the sci-fi genre, and I think that he can bring that. I agree, and I think he can bring that to Star Wars. Hopefully.
Oh yes, just to show how nerdy I am, Best Buy actually, whenever the first one came out, they actually had a collector's edition that came with like the little pins of all the different, you know, the engineer, the pilot, and stuff. I still have that somewhere. Yeah. I love that first one. It was so spectacular. Good. I mean, it was fantastic. I mean, I pretty much live and breathe science fiction stuff. I mean, it's remarkable. I mean, it's, you know, have you ever, I guess we're going to TV series for a second. Not talking about Lost, cause this is not space connected. Sure. I guess this really kind of isn't, but it is at the same time. Did you ever watch Fringe? It's another J.J. Abrams show. So,
you know, I watched it in the beginning. I watched, I think, like the first season. But the, you know, there were just too many other great shows at the time. My time was really limited, so I needed to cut back on something. So I cut Fringe, but I've heard since then that the future seasons from there were very good.
Yeah.
So I've always thought about going back and watching.
Yeah, you should. The last season was phenomenal, but the I think they went to season 5, I believe. But the season before the final season, oof, that was, I mean, I guess I would say go ahead and watch it, but take it with a grain of salt because it's pretty bad. Like, it's a minefield. It's like season 2 of Lost where they're like, we don't know what we're doing. Man, it ends. Oh my God. You're like,
so let me ask you this along the same vein. Have you heard of, or are you following the developments of a show called Defiance?
Defiance.
Defiance is a new sci-fi show.
I've heard of it because they made that video game that follows the
exactly.
Show. Exactly. I haven't watched that. That's on sci-fi, right?
It's on sci-fi. Yeah.
Sadly enough, I don't have sci-fi. I don't think.
You know, actually, I don't either. I'd get it online, but a good friend of mine is the science.
Where do you get it online? Do you just get it from?
There's a website called Channel 131 or ch131.com, and they basically have everything. They all the movies and television shows.
Channel 131.
Yeah, I think it is a offshore site. So just for your listeners' knowledge, I don't know that it's completely legal in the United States, but that's for them. That's for them to use, you know, on their own. Yes. But my good friend Kevin Grazier is the science advisor for Defiance.
Oh wow!
And he was also a little bit of history about him. I worked with him at JPL, and I taught classes with him at Santa Monica College, astronomy classes. But he was also the science advisor for Battlestar Galactica, the reimagined series. Oh man,
that's a great show.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy because, I personally have seen, you know, people in like their 30s and 40s, like bashing younger people like me because just insight, I'm only like 21 years old. So I was born like in 92, so I'm pretty young. And obviously I shouldn't really know much about, the original Battlestar, but I grew up watching it. It's like Star Trek. I grew up watching it because they had reruns. I mean, shoot, man, one of my favorite shows of all time is MASH. And that was way before my time, but I have the whole complete collection sitting right below my feet actually right now. Yeah. But my stepdad, I asked him if he watched Battlestar Galactica. It's like, old one or new one? It's like new one. It's like, no, it's a piece of crap compared to the original. No, you are crazy, man. I'm not even done with it. I've been pacing myself and watching it. It takes a while to go through that show. I'm on like season 3. I'm on like halfway through that. And man, that was another show I was going to ask if you watched because that show is incredible.
Oh, no. I love Battlestar Galactica, the new one.
Oh, my God. I love that show.
You know, I actually gave my friend Kevin the sort of ribbing because I actually didn't care for the ending, like the last episode. Like the last season I liked, but the last episode, I was just like, oh, it's sort of the themes that they tapped into. And I was just like, oh, really? Is that, you know. But I loved the whole journey. I mean, the series itself was fantastic, and it was just very well executed, very good acting, very good storytelling.
I mean, every time I turn around watching that show, I'm like, oh my God, my mind's just been blown. I will call Cannon and I'll be like, yeah, my brain's just exploded all over the walls, man.
Yeah.
Because something incredible. And he hasn't finished it yet, and... Because he's been, oh my God, man, I would never be able to do an English major because he's writing papers like crazy. And it just, I could never do that. But he's like, he hasn't written a review for our site like since October of last year for Louis season, last season Louis because he's been so busy. And I'm like, I can understand, man. He's been doing podcasts with me. So I'm like, oh, you know, that's making up for it. Oh, I can understand why he hasn't because he's been so busy. Something I want to talk about for a second is, I can tell you've watched Firefly.
Oh, I love Firefly.
Okay. Because I was about to hang up and finish this podcast if you hadn't actually, because I love
Firefly.
I love the crap out of that. I am a man, but I will admit I cried watching Serenity. I don't know if you watched Serenity or not.
I did watch Serenity. I
personally cried in that movie.
You cried?
Yes, when we saw Glass's character die. You know, the preacher. Oh, man, I love that character so much. And when we saw Alex's character die, the pilot, you know, I was like, oh, man, I'm crying. I personally, and it's crazy because we only had, half a season of that show.
I mean, I watched on DVD, so full season, but yeah, I know what you mean. Exactly.
But, man.
Yeah.
But they actually, they re-released it on Blu-ray, sometime last year for the 10-year anniversary.
Yep.
And I got that, and that was the time I had watched only one episode. I'd watched episode one, on Netflix a few years ago. Yeah. And then I saw that collection was on sale for like $20 on Best Buy. So I was like, oh my God, I got to go out and get that. Yeah. And I sat down and watched the whole thing in one weekend. I was like, oh my God, it ended too soon.
Yeah. And it's funny because, I remember, gosh, this is like 4 or 5 years ago. Kevin, the science advisor for Battlestar Galactica, it sort of arranged these Firefly lunches, because we did have lunches, and he would invite the whole Cassini team to watch Firefly in the conference room over lunch. And at that point, I'm guilty, I have this guilty complex because I'm one of the reasons that Firefly didn't succeed in its initial run, because I'm one of those people that would love it if it, watching it real time, as it broadcast, but didn't for, I don't know, maybe the sort of the sales like Western in space and, it just didn't seem like something that I would like at the time, but he was showing it for free with his DVD collection in the conference room. And then we would all go there, and I was episode after episode, I was watching this thinking to myself, out loud, why was this canceled? This is such a great show. And it was just, and he would be like, I know, right? And I'd be like, yeah, this is such a great show. When is the next episode? When are we going to do this again? And, and it's the first show, in fact, that I recommend to friends. I say, you have to watch Firefly. It's such a great show. And they're like, but when only episode aired for one season? I'm like, but you will get it. Once you've watched, you'll understand the tragedy that was Firefly and why didn't air for more than one season.
Yeah. So. Now this is not space related, but this is along the lines of a one season show. Did you ever watch Terriers, that PI investigated and show?
Can't say I did. No.
Oh man. I have to say that's about as perfect as a show can ever get aside from Breaking Bad. I don't know if you watch that.
Love Breaking Bad.
Oh my God. I cannot. I am just like, I'm wanting to beat somebody up because I'm so badly wanting, and I'm not a violent person usually. but I just cannot wait for the final half of this season, man. It's a truly incredible show, but Terriers is an incredible show. It is perfect. It's one season long, and it's one of those shows that got canceled way before its time. They left you off at the end and you're like, oh no, I want to see more. I noticed, I don't know if this was purposeful or not, but I noticed some hints of Firefly in your book actually.
Yes.
Who is it?
Stafford.
Yeah, I noticed a little bit of him, but Jack was like, oh gosh, what is his name? The guy that was always the butthole on Firefly. It's been a while since I watched it.
Jamie?
Yeah, Jamie. Yeah. Jack kind of reminds me of Jamie a little bit.
A little bit, yeah.
And Sophie, she works with the ships and stuff, right? She's the one that you see at the beginning that's, come on, baby, talking to her machine. She reminds me of the engineer.
That's Julie.
Yeah, oh, okay, Julie. Sorry about that. I'm getting my characters mixed up. So Julie reminds me of the engineer on Firefly, the girl that was working, because she's like, I imagine Julie rubbing her machine and be like, come on, baby, let's do this. Because, the engineer on Firefly, I'm really bad with names. But the female engineer on Firefly, I remember her rubbing.
Jewel State's her name.
Yeah, Jewel. I remember her rubbing the engine. Come on, baby, let's. And that's my baby. Julie feels kind of like Jewel a little bit. And so it just,
yeah, there definitely is some Firefly influence.
You know, and it really does suck, man, because I think if Firefly had existed 2 years ago, mm-hmm. man, it would still be going on. It would be one of those shows that had gone on for a while, I would think.
Yeah.
You know, Sci-Fi, I think, from what I heard last, actually owns the rights to it. But the problem is, you know, obviously Joss Whedon's doing the amazing Avengers, you know. He's doing those films. And, you know, they have the S.H.I.E.L.D. series coming out, so he's involved with a lot of stuff. Nathan Fillion's doing great work on Castle, you know. And Alex, he does a lot of cameo appearances. He's currently working in Suburgatory. I love that guy, man. He's in Dollhouse, and he's incredible in that show.
Yeah.
But so it just sucks that everybody, you know, I'm glad that they're all having a pretty successful career, you know. And then the lady that's the, I'm trying to think of her name. The lady that's, his companion, Malcolm's companion.
Inara?
Yeah, Inara. She's, you know, that woman, she's working on, what is that show?
Well, she was on V for a while.
Yeah, she was on V for a while, but she's on that show, what is that called? It's like Homefront, like that. I forgot. She plays a lead role in this show. I don't remember. But anyway, so almost everybody from that show is like doing something. You know, it's like, oh man, you just want them to join back together and get the gang back together and do Firefly, you know?
Yeah.
The only problem would be is do they carry off from where they left off on the show, or do they carry where they left off from the movie, you know?
Yeah.
But so. Yeah.
If they were going to reinvent that show, which I would be thrilled if they did. In fact, Nathan Fillion was actually talking about buying the rights to the show.
Yeah, I know. He kept on talking about doing it.
Yeah, and I think that it would be to their benefit to start with the whole new cast. Maybe have Nathan Fillion come back and sort of reprise his role with a new, you know, and maybe Jane and maybe, sort of.
Maybe he's like this old captain that's like.
Yeah.
He's like this old retired captain that kind of puts his input on in you know in the situations. That would be hilarious. That would be a great role for him.
Like, I agree.
Like this old scallywag captain. That's like, I remember the day.
Yeah, and in fact, I think it would enhance his character a little bit.
And every once in a while, he like starts telling stories that you don't that never happened in Firefly, yeah. But some that Joss Whedon had wanted to do originally, you know?
Exactly.
Like, just be like, oh, I remember this time when I was on the ship, and you know, that would be awesome.
Yeah, or even, like, one of my favorite episodes was Janestown. I don't know if you remember that one.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I love that episode. And so, like, him referencing Janestown, like, in a new series, I think it would be so classic for him to sort of be this curmudgeon-y old captain that is sort of doing the same thing, and he's sort of carrying on these scallywag of a crew and, you know, this mishmash of different personalities and doing this mission. And, you know, he's just sort of trying to make the best of it. And, I think it would be a great reboot, great possibilities. Oh, yeah.
Have you watched, I know you said earlier, you're trying to, you know, not watch too many TV series cause you don't have time. Have you watched any of, his show Castle?
I haven't been able to watch Castle.
Well, it'd take a while for you to catch up on that. It's like I'm five seasons in. I think they're going to go to six and in probably.
Yeah.
But he's phenomenal in that. Oh my God. I love him in that.
Yeah.
And they have like a book series attached to it, which that's what's cool about his show is he's a writer that's following the police and getting story ideas from the police. And, I've read all four of the main books that are attached to the show. And then there's like three novels. And man, it's just cool because you see them doing the autograph signing and stuff in the show, and then you can actually go out and buy the books. I'm like, that's kind of cool. It's kind of neat. You don't see that much.
That's cool.
But so we're at about an hour. If you're ready to go ahead and end the podcast, we can go ahead and end it. But man, this was awesome. Like I was glad we were able to actually talk for an hour. Cause I was like, oh man, 30 minutes. Whew, that's short. Like it just seemed like it was going to come and go before we knew it. Yeah. But this has been truly an incredible experience for me.
For me as well. Thank you very much.
I thoroughly enjoyed this. Man, we would have to keep in contact, man. I'll email you and find out what you think about Star Trek after it comes out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely let me know when it's getting close for the book to release. And definitely, you know, you asked me the other day if I would want, you know, some more of the book. Definitely send it to me because I will definitely read it.
Sure,
absolutely. We're starting to kind of we're starting to slow down a little bit at work, so. I've been working like 40, 50 hours these past 2 weeks, so I've been tired. But when I get the chance, I definitely will start reading more of it because okay.
You got it.
Like I said, I've read I think I'm like halfway through chapter 9.
Okay.
I cannot say enough good things about that book.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you
very much for the compliments. Honestly and truly, I really don't have anything really negative to say about it.
Yeah.
And I mean, I know you don't want to hear that. I mean, you want to, but you don't because you're like, well, what can you give me insights? I really don't know. I mean, I would just say just keep up on the incredible character development that you have going on in the book because that is really key, you know?
Yeah. I agree.
You know, going back to Lost again, that one of the, you know, regardless of how the show ended, it was known for its character development.
It's interesting that you mentioned that too, because I mean, Lost actually played, believe it or not, despite my criticism of the final season, Lost actually played a big role in this book, in the flashbacks.
I was going to actually ask that.
Lost has this character development through flashbacks, and I really liked that. In fact, I loved that in Lost.
The first season how they do that. I mean, it's really incredible.
It was just like you sort of understanding about not only the people, the character past, but their motivations for making certain decisions in the current storyline. And I loved that. I loved the fact that it was something in their past that happened or that affected them in such a profound way that drove them to make a certain decision in the present. And so that's what that technique is what I focused on in Tesla Prime was, you know, it's sort of at a decision where a character would like needed to make a decision. I do this flashback that has some sort of this profound, this event that has some profound effect on them that will drive them, make clear why they make it a certain decision. And then I return to the present and then they make that decision. And that was a technique that I learned from Lost. And I think it's a fabulous storytelling technique. And a lot of Lost actually plays a role in my book.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like I said, Kenan introduced that to me and I can't thank the guy enough because, you know, Lost really changed his life. You know, most people are like, how can that show? Well, that show is very impactful. Like I said, regardless of how you feel about the show, you could give it credit that it is really impactful and it really changed the way you think of writing or reading or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
And it really changes you. It's a very, very, you know, pop culture show that really impacts people.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a truly incredible show. And, you know, I definitely was wanting to point that out because it's like, man, I can see a little bit of Firefly in here. I can see a little bit of Lost. Chapter 8 with Sophie, where she's, you know, her father's sitting there drinking some vodka. And I love that whole scene because I was reading, I was like, this guy's watched Lost.
Yeah.
I was like, I can just tell by the way you're writing.
Lost is an influence.
I was like, this is dripping with Lost references because I was like, man, this feels so much like a Lost, like a scene from Lost.
Lost mixed with Firefly. That's a good way to describe my book.
You know, and I like what you said earlier. And I know we're going a little bit over an hour, but, I like what you said earlier and I agree with you about the fact that for me, this is a science fiction novel.
Yeah.
You know, it's a science fiction book, but, at its heart, it's kind of a mystery thriller because have this planet that's disappeared that, you know, they haven't seen in 27 years. And I hate to do this, but I totally did not finish what I was saying earlier about the beginning of the about reading the synopsis. Is that I read it and I was starting to read it, and you said these seven scientists went to another planet. I was like, oh God, here we go.
That's not what the book's about.
I know that. I'm just like, when I was reading the synopsis, like, oh boy, here we go. Here's another guy writing another book about these scientists that went to some other planet and they spent their time. And then I read the next sentence and like, they come back 27 years later to find Earth is gone. It's like, that's awesome. Yeah. I went from, oh boy, here we go again, to, oh my God, I can't wait to read this.
Yes.
But so, yeah, I love the fact that it's a science fiction novel. It's kind of a time travel story in that the science fiction is just a side note. It's just a little small part.
A little bit.
Yeah. And because if you ever watch Looper, people are like, oh, it's a time travel movie. No, not really. That's just the time travel is in of itself a character. Like, the science fiction, the space exploration part of this book is like a character in of itself. Yep. And the main, you know, genre of the book is really a mystery thriller. Because, like you said, you have all these people that have died. You have all these people that are lost. And it just, I love that, because I was thinking, okay, it's just going to be a space exploration. They're going to be searching through space, you know, looking for Earth. But then when you get into reading, you find out about the ring. You're like, oh, wait, this is a sci-fi book, but it's not. It's a mystery thriller. And I love that twist, because I've never really seen much of anything like that, you know? And that's pretty unique. I think you, sir, have created a new genre.
Well, thank you.
Sci-fi appreciate mystery that. Thrillers. Like, that should be like a new genre. I want to see more books like that. Like, that's great. So, that's kind of like how Dimension of Miracles is, because this guy wins this international lottery and he has to try to find his way back home to his Earth. Like, if you like, you know, parallel universes and stuff like that, then you'll love Fringe, first of all, and you'll love Dimension of Miracles, because it has, you know, different realities, you know, I mean, parallel universes, different timelines. I mean, that's an incredible book. So I think we're going to go ahead and end the podcast right here. Yeah, listeners, you can check him out at Tesla Prime on Twitter. Check it out on Facebook, Tesla Prime, and the Regulus event on Facebook. Isn't that what you have, or is it just Tesla Prime on Facebook?
Tesla Prime and the Regulus event. That's
okay. Right. And so, like I said earlier, you can check them out on WordPress at teslaprime.wordpress.com. And you can check me out at multimediacritics.com. Follow me on Twitter at mmcritics. On Twitter, and you can follow me personally at CAW says on Twitter, and so definitely check that out. Check out my website. Definitely check out his website. Follow him on Twitter, definitely, for sure. And thanks again, man, for this truly incredible experience.
Sure, Cody, it was my pleasure.
I mean, like I said, we would definitely would love to have you back on, man.
It'd be my pleasure.
This was awesome. But thanks for listening, and we will definitely we'll have another. Me and Kane will probably have another podcast in about 2 weeks, because Iron Man 3 is coming out, so yeah, that's going to be a big deal. But for you listeners, we'll have a podcast hopefully up in about 2 weeks, the weekend of May 4th, hopefully. So thanks for listening.